Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening. Wherever you get your podcast, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we are doing our interview. And joining us is a man with the largest ring I have ever seen in my life, Gucci Mane, in the house.
Hey, thank you for having me. Appreciate you having me.
How many carats is that?
I'm not even sure right now, to be honest. I can't remember.
I got to get a picture of that before I get out of here, because I was like, man, it looked like your finger got to be tired.
Man, a big dog need a big ring.
Yeah, man. All right. Now, Woptober, it's out.
No, it comes out Friday.
Friday. Got you, man. How you feel about it?
I'm excited. Every time I get a chance to release an album, I'm excited about it. I have just as much fun rolling it out as I have recording it.
Now, you're one of the dudes that just records like a bunch of tracks just consistently, right? And then comes back later and puts them together. So, like, what about this album is different to you than previous work?
All my albums kind of like time capsules, because this album, like, you know, a lot of times I do kind of like go back and get older recordings. But this recording right here is like, you know, like 2 weeks in my life, the last couple of months. So it's like this where I'm at right now.
All right. So what's the difference between where you are now, you would say, versus where you'd been?
It's all about being real and being current, you know what I'm saying? So my old albums describe like what I was doing when I was born in 1980. So if you heard me in 2007, that was me at 27.
Right.
So if you hear me in 2019, you hear me at 39. The raps that I make is almost like I'm rapping about my life. I'm rapping about what I see. So it's like it just keeps going.
Right.
You know.
Now, one of the cooler things I think for me as I get older, because I'm the same age as you, is rap is kind of growing up with us, right? Like, yes. I can't think of, like, being younger, listening to, like, a 39-year-old rapper and getting that kind of experience out of life. Like, it's an interesting thing for me now that cats that I grew up listening to or was, in the same age range listening to, y'all are grown-ups now.
Yes, 100%.
So what about that do you think comes through the most in your music?
To be, like, a fan of music, everybody gets something different from music, and everybody's kind of, like, different. Like, I'm kind of the opposite. I started professionally rapping when I was 25. But I also, you know, like a lot of dope artists that started when they were like 17 or 18.
Right.
So with me, it was like I was already a grown man talking about grown man things to me. You mm-hmm. know, I had grown man responsibilities at 25. So, and the people that I kind of gravitated towards, I'm a fan of, was kind of like older, established artists. I kind of would like the CEO of the artist. I kind of like listening to Birdman, when a lot of people probably would gravitate to Wayne. Or, you know, I just always want to hear somebody feel like, inspire me. I'm inspired by kind of like the person who cut the check, and that kind of always tended to be the older person in the crew, and that's how I kind of like approached me getting into the rap game. Hey, I want to be the boss. I want to run a crew. I want to be a CEO. And I was like 25, so my whole thing was I want to be an executive that rap. It was never like I want to be a child star, starving artist, broke. It's kind of like I want to establish a crew. I want to be just older artists that rap.
Right. Now, it's interesting hearing you say you want to be like a CEO of their raps, because, like, what was the hardest part for you about, like, becoming that CEO, or what you didn't see coming in that role?
Just I didn't have the money. You know what I'm saying? I didn't have the money. And at the time, it was frustrating, but it made me so creative. I kept finding ways to compete, you know, far as, like, you know, with the attention span of the audience. You know, the people with the most money, that, you know, can drive, you know, the audience, I guess, more to the listener. I couldn't buy a billboard, so I would have to be creative with my cover art, or, you know, how I did my show, or, you know, how I marketed myself. Because it was like I had to be all these people on my staff myself at the beginning.
Well, like, how early in it did you realize, you know, you started doing it at 25, though, that rap was something that you want to do? Because it sounds like you had a real kind of vision for all of this that seems like something that somebody would be stacking up over a long period of time before they got started.
Before I started rapping, I was, you know, I was an entrepreneur. I was doing a lot of things. I was hustling, and I was going to school, but I wasn't really taking it seriously. Once I had got arrested when I was going to college, when I remember like 2019, something like that, definitely my freshman year of college, when I said I was going to leave the street game and get to the rap game, it was kind of like a practical approach. Like, this is what I'm going to do. You know, I'm going to put this amount of money in it. It's not going to happen overnight. It was almost like strategic, you know, like I'm going to start, you know, I'm not doing that no more. I tried that. I see the consequences for that. And then it's like, okay, I'm going to take the money that I have now, and I'm going to try to, you know, see how much attention I can gather. And even when then it was like, I'm going to sell these CDs, and when I get the money back, I'm going to reinvest in myself, you know. So it really was a plan.
Right. I hear you talk about being in college. I'm trying to, like, imagine, like, you as a freshman in college. Freshman in college is, like, the most fun time I ever had in life. Like, I'm thinking, like, what was life for you like being a freshman in college?
The first year, I didn't go to school the first year. So I told my mom, I want to take off. She kept saying, you know, go to school. So I was like, I need a year off. So that next year, I went to the community college in my neighborhood because I had a scholarship. I Hope Scholarship had a 3.0. But I was selling drugs at the time, and I was really more, in my mind, I was so immature. I was thinking, I don't even know if it was mature or smart. I was like, I'm just going to get the money. I was getting the loans and flipping it. I was even buying the books and reselling the books back to the bookstore at school just to get money to invest in what I was doing. So to me, it was like, it was fun. And, you know, I had a car. I was fresh as hell. And it was a community college. So my whole thing, I used to want to go to school and just, it was like a fashion show. I wasn't thinking about the studies at 19. You know, it was more like I'm doing this to satisfy my mother and keep off my back so I can stay at home with her and do the things that I was doing.
All right, look, I went to Clark at that same time period, and it was a fashion show even if you were trying to actually read the books.
I used to drive to Clark and just ride around. I'd ride to Clark. I'd ride to – when I supposed to be in school, that's what I would do because my mother still expected me to be in college.
Right.
Or during those hours. So I'd get up and went, go to class and just ride around all the colleges.
See, you was one of those dudes making our lives hard. My little car wasn't really doing too much. You coming over here pulling up stunting, and we're sitting here like, well, like, so you man, were that dude.
I would come over there, and I would meet those girls, and they were so broke back then, and, you know, and I was getting money then. It was like, I pull up, you know, you got a nice car. It was easy back then to just, you know, if you got some money to meet college girls because they was broke, and the boys was broke too.
Man, look, we used to roll up, like, you know that street that was over there, like right in front of the projects, you go around it to go up toward Morehouse.
And we University.
Yeah, right. It was off
University.
Greens Ferry. Yeah, it was Greens Ferry going right around there. Yeah. And I remember one day we pulled up there, three dudes pulled up in V12 Benzes. Three of them. They were just stacked up. You know, I ain't never seen anything like that before in my life. Three of them. And I just remember standing there being like, man, what are we supposed to do? Right? What chance we got out here with this?
That make it tough.
Yeah, all right.
That make it tough.
You got me thinking about all these, man. One time this dude, his sister went to school. This famous NFL player, his sister went to school with me. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go holler at her, right? Mm-hmm. And I walked over to holler at her, and I got there. She was sitting in the front seat of that Jaguar in the parking lot. And I was just like, no, I'm not going to holler at her today. This is not gonna happen because Gucci Mane and the crew is coming. Best the game up for everybody else.
It was like that.
Yeah, man.
It was like that.
Yeah, man. So I remember I watched this on Instagram not too long ago. This was like for me, like somebody who didn't even really know you was like, "Yo, man, good for him." You were in Iceland, checking out the Northern Lights.
Yes.
And you looked so like kind of amazed at the fact that you were there in the first place.
I was amazed. I want to go back. You know, I got in the lagoon. All that, man. It was like it was an experience that I never think that I would value so much until I could do it because I never had a passport. I never had a chance to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I had always wanted to travel out the country. So to be honest, like once I leave the country, it's like I turned to a tourist because I can't even hide it. It's just something I wanted to do for so long.
Do you remember the first time you got out?
The first time I got a chance to travel
out of the country, yeah.
Yes, it was recently. Like Iceland was like one of my first trips.
Oh, really?
I just got my passport like the last 3 years.
Really?
So the first trip I went was like a Europe run, but it was all shows. I really didn't get a chance to like go see nothing or go see no famous landmarks and stuff like that. But when I got to Iceland, it's like I had, you know, I flew in early. I flew in enough time where I could just, you know, enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Whose idea was that one? Because I was like, that's one of those I feel like people suggest to you.
Actually, I had a festival. I was doing a festival that next day, but I flew in a day early just to, you know, just to chill.
Yeah, man. It just looks like you're doing well. Like, that's my thought when I see this. I saw when the book came out and everything else. It just seems like generally you're just kind of doing well. It's kind of a cool thing to watch.
Man, I'm doing way better, and I'm glad you said that. I appreciate that. I'm doing way better. I feel better, and it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to just keep doing the right thing over and over, honestly.
Did you ever think at the 25 range anywhere in there that you would be a dude who would have a television show based around his wedding?
I don't know if I thought I was going to have a television show about my wedding, but I thought I was going to be successful when I first got in the game at 25. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was going to be I didn't know how I was going to get there, you know. I definitely didn't know the route, but I thought I was going to win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt like I was going to be resilient. And I didn't know how it was going to happen, but I felt like I was going to be a successful person.
Well, did you have a moment in the game where you realized, like, oh, now this is flipped up?
What you mean, like, flipped
up? Like, in terms of, like, I really am making this happen.
when I just got out the last about 3.5 years ago.
Really?
That's when everything kind of clicked for me. Like, okay, I feel like it was worth it. All the things that I did, I finally feel like I got an education from it. You know, I won't make those mistakes again.
Yeah, because for me, like, I remember when you dropped and, like, when So Icy came out.
Yeah.
And I was, like, in the zone of Atlanta at the time. It could be hard for me to figure out, like, this is cracking in Atlanta. How much is this hitting, like, in everywhere else? And I remember it was a couple years later, I was somewhere and I heard Pills on the radio. And I was like, oh, okay, I didn't realize that this was going on everywhere else. Then it was about 2010, and I'm talking to my homeboys in Canada. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. So y'all are on this, too. Like, this is a thing. You know, like, this is really kind of blown up. So I'm kind of surprised that you say it's, like, in the last few years that it really hit you that this had made it.
To be honest, all those years, like in 05, even up to 2010, I was just making music for, like, my community, my friends. Even though it was going, like you're saying, it was going to Canada, I hadn't been to Canada. I had been to a lot of places where my music was traveling to. So it'll beat me there.
Right.
You know, so people would tell me, like, man, they going crazy over you in Cincinnati. They going crazy for you in Mobile or Columbia, South Carolina. But a lot of these places, I couldn't feel the impact. I could only feel what was resonating in Atlanta. So, but it was a good strategy. I was like, if I can just mess Atlanta up, if I can please them, then I felt like that was the hardest people. So once I got them grooving, it's just like the rest of the world. If you can make it in Atlanta with all the dope artists there, you got you some.
Yeah. And I was kind of, and especially like with the beats and stuff that you were doing, it kind of ushered in a game change in terms of the sound of rap. Like I say, so much now sounds like 3-6 Mafia stuff from like the late 90s and early 2000s. But a lot of that is really starting from the sound that I think that you were coming out with in that same time period. You know, so like, are you a person who got into this just because of what it could do for, or are you a person that like really loves music in that way?
It's kind of like both. I think it can be both. I always been a fan of music my whole life. You know, just a big, just rap music, just because I had an older brother 6 years older than me, and he always just was hip on what was hot from LL Cool J, from LL Cool J to Run DMC to Kool Moe Dee.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I always kind of got like secondhand tapes from him.
Right.
So he kind of like set the standard of this is dope, this is cool, this is the hot person, what's going on. So when you 10 and you got a 16-year-old brother, now he's 22 and you 16, it's kind of like gave me an advantage over the guys at my age. So it's like I always know what's going on because of my older brother. So I felt like I was a little faster. So that kind of gave me the love for music.
Right.
And once I start saying, hey, I want to be an artist, I want to put out music, I'm going to be serious about it, I kind of knew who I liked and what I wanted to sound like.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that I liked a lot was the Memphis rappers. So it influenced my style because I was like, not so much of I wanted people to embrace me like how I felt like I embraced them. I felt like that was real. I felt like what they were saying, I connected to it. I felt like Project Pat, 666 Mafia, Player Fly, Skinny Pimp. These was the artists. My brother was buying these artists' music, and I was playing it in his car because I'm still young, 15, 16. He's 22. So he's playing this, and it's like, man, I feel like I respected those artists. It wasn't the same feeling that I had for a different artist.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started being a rapper, I just wanted people to feel me. My whole thing was I just wanted to connect with them and them feel like, man, I love not just my music. I wanted people like, man, he real.
Right.
What he's saying is the truth.
Right.
And that was my whole thing. Once you connect with people like that, it doesn't really matter the quality of the music. Like, I don't care at the point, you know, if BG the best rapper or C Murder the best rapper or Eazy-E the best rapper. Like I said, a bird, man. I felt like the people who was cutting the check, that was more grounded in reality. That was doing stuff in the hood that was real.
Right.
So that's who I want to hear.
Yeah,
and that's how I wanted people to feel about me.
Yeah, that's how I talk to people about Pac when they talk about how good Pac was. I was like, it's ain't about how good he was.
Exactly.
Right? It's about what he means to the people who are listening to him. Now, as a writer, I'm curious who influenced you, because you always had a real clever turn of phrase in the way that you did it. And I don't know if you thought about it when you got started in that way, or was it just about the music in a larger sense?
If I think about it now, when I first started writing, because I'm trying to think, where would I draw my passion from? I would say maybe my mother.
Really?
She was a school teacher, and when I first started making raps, I always say I started writing them like an essay, intro, body, conclusion,
mm-hmm.
because I was in college at that time. I had just graduated 12th grade, so when I started writing my first raps, I would write the first verse, the second verse, and the third verse, the same way that they taught me to write an essay, the same way my mother taught me to write an essay. So in a way, it kind of did influence my style, because I felt like I had to get to the end.
Mm-hmm.
I would bring you in, I would try to draw you in. The second part, I kind of like, you know, I always try to have like three styles. So I rap three different ways. So it kind of made me it made me endlessly creative and inventive.
Right.
I'll be having so many experiments. People be like, why you pick that beat? Or why you rapping like that? I just be trying to like change my voice, change my cadence, change my style. I was treating it as almost like it was a, I'm telling you, like it was a project.
Right.
Like, how would I sound if I rap on a New York person beat that, you know, even though I wasn't that into that, like, how would I sound? I would get, like, Method Man tapes. You know, I remember on cassette tapes and just rap over his old songs, like the one he did with Mary J. Blige. I just rap just to see that, not even, just to see how I sounded. And then I go record a song with Zay just after I practice, just on different people's beat, and then I rap to his beat after I done wrote the song to a New York beat.
Right.
And it'll make it sound kind of like, throw it off a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but it'll be crazy.
Right. Speaking of your mom, how she feel about all this?
She passed away now.
I apologize. Yeah.
That's okay. She passed away in January of this year, but I'm pretty sure she's proud of me.
Seems like that hits you.
It's recent.
Yeah.
It's recent. I dedicated my last album to my mother and my father, and my dad had passed like 2 years ago too, so both of them just now passed away.
Yeah, like I remember my brother used to try to like get in the game, and my parents are teachers also. Man, it was a hard sell to my mama to try to get her to believe that this is what, now it wasn't what he needed to do, to be clear. He has a regular job, he's doing very well, but I remember like that was the hard thing to be like, nah, I'm trying to do this.
My mother told me don't do it. Really? Straight like that. You should not be a rapper, you should just get a regular job, because like you said, she had, and it was a practical practical advice, because she had a job. She worked there for like 30 years, and my brother had a job. He worked with her for like 20 years. So she was like, man, you know, you need to come down and work with us. This is the practical thing to do, you know, over rapping. You think this is going to really work? And I was like, I'm telling you, when I got out of jail with the money I had, I like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm not trying to go back to school. I'm going to start being a rapper. And she was like, you don't even know how to rap. You know, you don't know nobody in the industry. I don't think that's a good idea. Just like that. I was like, well, I'm still trying to think. I told her, I made one song and I've been getting good feedback on it. So I think I'm gonna pursue it. It was almost like a business. It wasn't even though all over the place. It was like, I don't think you should do that. And this is why.
Right.
And I was like, well, this is why I'm gonna try it. I tried, did a little experiment. People liking it. This is what I'm gonna do.
And I guess plus by then you're a grown man. So this isn't like I'm asking for advice as much as I'm just letting you know what's going on.
I was a grown man, but it was like a transitional period. It was like when everything was exposed. I had lost a scholarship, no college. I had just got out of jail. I didn't have a lot of money at that time. So it was like, you know, she had seen me up even though I was like 21, 22. She like, what you going to do with your life now?
Right. I mentioned a little earlier that you had put out your autobiography, which is very good. It was a very interesting sort of thing to do. Who was the person to approach you with the idea of doing that?
I had an engineer. And my engineer was the first person to tell me, man, you should probably try to, you know, like write a book while you locked up. I was putting out a lot of mixtapes while I was in jail, and I was working with the engineer, you know, like, let me hear the songs. I was just putting out all the songs on my hard drive, like the first 3 or 4 months I got arrested. And about 3 or 4 months, and he was like, man, why don't you write a story about your life? People would be interested in it. And I was just thinking about it, and then I was like, man, I don't know how to write. I ain't never did that before. So I was just sitting there, then after about 2 weeks, I said, I'm going to try it. And I just wrote like 50 pages in a row. I just couldn't stop. And I had never even tried. And I started from like, you know, when I first, just how the book started. Man, after I started writing, I just started getting into it and started like mailing it to people, letting them see what they see in that little mail it back to me. And everybody like, you got to keep going. This is something.
It's interesting that you wrote it, because very often when these autobiographies come, it's normally just somebody doing interviews with a writer, and then they take it all down and try to like redo your words in the paragraph.
I got somebody to help me with it. Yeah. But at first I started by myself.
Right. Was it helpful for you, like, while you were passing the time, just to have that to do?
It helped me. It changed my life. Writing that book changed my life. It gave me closure. It helped me get out of jail and, you know, feel like a new slate. Because all these things, a lot of things in the book, it was a secret to me. Right. Like, I didn't want people to know, you know, these things happened to these, now the backstories to what happened. So once I had felt like I had served my time for every crime I had did, I feel like I have nothing to hide. So I just put it all out there in the book form. And that was my way of saying, hey, I'm not going to repeat these offenses again.
Was there anything that was really hard for you to share from that?
Yeah. A lot of stuff with my parents, a lot of stuff with my brother, a lot of stuff. People in the rap game, you know, I didn't want to offend them or make them feel like I was telling a tell-all, but a lot of them were a part of my history, and I wanted to just really let people get inside of what was going on with me. So it was a lot of difficult. It was challenging.
Yeah, with the rap stuff, one of the things I found when we did Highly Questionable and we would ask people about, like, old stuff, it was a lot of cats who had situations with dudes, and it's not that they didn't want to talk about it as much as they didn't want it to come back up again, right? Like, yeah. It's just like, okay, this has been dealt with. Like, I imagine for you with Jeezy, for example, that's something that's been gone over, over and over again. So, like, was that part of the concern also?
Not really. I guess maybe some certain, you know, parts of it are very touchy, like, mm-hmm. far as the murder part. But other than that, it's kind of like everybody kind of know the story. It wasn't really nothing was already just like out there.
Right. Yeah. Now, on the new album, who'd you work with on this one?
Jay White, Southside, Metro, Zaytoven, D.Y., I don't want to leave nobody out. Young Lan. And Take Keith.
Did you go into this one with an idea of what you wanted it to be?
To be honest, I didn't. What happened was I met a producer named Jay White. Me and him just hit it off, and we just did a bunch of songs. So we kind of like did half of the album in like 3 or 4 days. And after that, I was just inspired, and then I just started, you know, flying people to Miami, flying to Atlanta. It's like a bench. I just went on like a recording bench. And once I made like 13 or 14 songs, I was just eager to share it. And it was coming up on October. So I'm like, I'm dropping these songs and I'm calling this Waptober 2. I want people to hear it. You know, I don't want to just hold it on my computer.
So when you put out a record now, what do you look to accomplish with it?
I just want to entertain people. My same thing. I just want to entertain people. I just want to connect with them. I want people to like it. I just want to share it. I feel like I found something good I can do. I'm good at creating music and making rap songs. And to me, it's an entertaining thing. I don't listen to music to be informed about what's going on in the world. I listen to music to get up and get me to the gym or, you know, get me to the club or make me want to go get a haircut. And I feel like that's what this album going to do. It make you want to go get your car washed and go on a date. You know, it got a song for everything. For as if you want to be in a good, if you want to have a good time, if you finna play this song, if you finna warm up for the game and y'all finna come out, I feel like this is the perfect game for the high school. This is the perfect game to play at the band to take these songs and recreate. It's just like a fun album. It's not a depressed album. It's not a personal album. It's just a dude in the studio having fun.
Now, is making music easier for you now than it was before?
I think it's more fun. It's always kind of came easy to me, but like I said, if I was in a dark place, you'd just hear dark songs during that time capsule in my life. You know, if I'm in a good place, then you hear more festive songs. It's kind of almost like whatever's on my mood is kind of what's going to go on the mic.
What have you been listening to these days?
These days, I've been listening to, I like Young Thug's new album. Mm-hmm. I like Da Baby and I like Lil Baby. Big Future fan. Who else? Like the Migos a lot.
Yeah. I do feel like Da Baby and the Lil Baby, they need to settle this. I can't keep this straight.
Both of them hard. Though,
I know. They got to have a fight or a battle or something if somebody gets the name.
They did a song together.
Yeah, I know. And I looked at them both like, no, this is not making things easier for me.
Then you know you got Baby. You got Baby Bird, man. Too,
yeah, but
man.
I say that's the thing too. It's just like we have a string of babies. I cannot keep all of these babies straight.
That's like a coming hood nickname.
Yep.
So that's all it is.
So how do you feel about your place? You kind of an OG to those cats coming in the game on that style now.
Yeah. Yeah, I love being like the elder statesman or the big brother, you know, with who went through some and have something, some advice that they respect. My whole thing when I got out was I wanted to be somebody that the younger rappers could look up to, and I didn't want to preach to them. And I know I had did so many things, you know, that I was like, what are they going to listen to me for? So my whole thing was get out, you know, don't talk about it, just do it, and people going to want to follow your steps. So. And that's how I kind of, you know, people say they come to me now. They don't come to me because of what I'm saying, because they like, they see it. And they're like, man, I like what you're doing with your life. I like how you change your life. You know, I'm glad that you married. I'm seeing the benefits of it. And then they ask me about it. Now I ain't got to preach it on them. They come to me with, you know, asking about it.
What do you think is the biggest thing that you've learned from the record industry?
Just hold yourself accountable. Hold yourself accountable. Don't be so defensive. You're supposed to be doing it to have fun. Treat it like a job, you know. Be responsible, you know, take it serious.
You talk about being defensive. Defensive against what?
Defensive against, like, just got to defend yourself. You know, you're an artist. You always, like, got to defend your art. You got to defend your actions. You feel like you got to defend your IQ. you know, it's just when you, especially new artists, you people don't know you. So it's like, you always feel like you got to defend your street credibility. It's just a lot of things that kind of come with, you know, you kind of like want to establish when you're a young artist, you feel like you got to let people know, hey man, I'm not no one hit wonder. Right. Oh, you know, I'm really from the hood. You know, I'm really this. I'm really independent. It's so many things that you feel like you want to just let people know, you know, that you're not like the other person. When you don't got to defend it, just let your art speak for itself and let people gradually get to know you.
Now, is rap something that you can see yourself doing, like from here, like another 10 years or another 15 years?
100%. I feel like, why would somebody ask me that? To me, it's almost disrespectful. But man, I know you don't mean to be disrespectful about it, but it's like, if we 39 and you view me as I can only rap 10 years, or do I see it? Do you see Aretha Franklin rapping? Did anybody tell her that? Did anybody tell Patti LaBelle, you got 10 more years? Why would you tell me that? If I'm successful, hopefully. But I guess, you know, if I'm not, then I won't be there.
Yeah, see, I wondered, though, because rap...
Do they ask the Rolling Stones, hey, when y'all going to stop going on tour, man?
Oh, yeah, but see, it's not even about stopping as much as we see cats like LL Cool J is an example, right, where rap can take you into these different places. And often the stresses of like being in the industry makes cats decide to parlay that into something else that they feel like they can get some more money off of, or they love doing it now, but it's almost like if you're a football player, right? You get to a certain point, it's like, okay, maybe I might want to do something else. Because I agree with you, though, because rappers are the only people that people think, okay, well, you're supposed to stop making your music. I just always wonder with people if that's what they want to do.
I feel like with being a rapper, you got to be aware of your limitations, and you got to live in reality, and don't be delusional. You can't be if people not feeling LL Cool J, it's probably smart. And, you know, for him to, like, leverage his popularity into music, movies, or whatever he's doing, like Will Smith or Ice-T, and you know, I'm not knocking that. That's great. You know, so that give me something to look forward to as well. But you still also got the E-40s. You got the Puff Daddies. You got Jay-Z's. You got all these people who, you know, in their late 40s, 10 years older than me, who still successful, who I still want to hear their music because, you know, that's still interesting to me.
Right.
So my whole thing is, just keep your goals set on, just keep them practical.
Right.
If people don't want to hear it, then maybe you should, you know, get into whatever it is, your next phase, which you could do.
Right.
If people like your music and you still can tour and it's making a bunch of money, I think you should do it just like these other rock and roll stars do it, country stars do it, you know, and successful rappers do it. You go as long as you can. If I'm Tom Brady, I'm going to play until, you know, I can play at my peak. I'm not going to stop.
Right. Now, do you worry about, like, I don't know if staying current is the right way to put it, right? But, like, Andre 3000 made the point that he feels like it's hard to keep up with the rhythm once your time passes because the rhythm of the music changes and he feels like he's on a different beat, you know, like from what is quote-unquote music for right now. For you, it seems that whenever you've done this, it's always been in the lane of what is current in the industry. Is that, like, is there something about staying there that you do specifically, or is it just kind of having a sense of what's out there?
I think a lot of artists, and what makes my situation different is I just keep being myself, and that keeps me real. That keeps me relevant. A lot of artists, 10 years ago, they was interesting and they was relevant then because we was interested then. From that point, we're not interested anymore. The audience isn't interested anymore, so they moved on. The audience has moved on, but we still appreciate their last works. You know, and that's just truth. And a lot of people, like I said, they stay grounded in reality. They know that. A lot of people don't. They still keep putting it out. Me, I'm going to keep putting out music because it's easy to me. It ain't even no fight. You know what I'm saying? It's like, go to the studio, make the money because I'm seeing the numbers. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Ain't no way I'm going to stop.
All right, that is Gucci Mane. Waptober comes out October 18th.
Yes, sir.
That's on Friday. I'm glad you're happy with it, man. It's real good to talk to you here. I really appreciate you taking the time with us.
Man, thank you for having me, Bumana, man. It was an honor.
No problem, man. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes, but also Daniel Stanchik handled this today. Thank you, sir. Be sure to check out The Bill Barnwell Show. He and a guest will preview Week 7 of the NFL slate. Download and subscribe to Bill Barnwell Show. Also, subscribe at the right time wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we will talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.